From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. In early 2004, New Hampshire Democrats were looking for a strong candidate to go up against former businessman and current governor Craig Benson. Several names emerged. One of them was John Lynch. Like Benson, Lynch had no prior experience in elective office, but he was a former CEO himself and current head of the university system's Board of Trustees. The race was close, but in the end, Lynch squeaked out a win to become the state's 80th governor. From there, he spent 8 years in the corner office, the longest-serving governor since New Hampshire went to a 2-year gubernatorial term. John Lynch served during good economic times and bad, under times when Republicans held large majorities and when Democrats controlled everything in the state. But despite this political schizophrenia, Governor Lynch's approval ratings always remained high. John Lynch chose not to serve a 5th term and now passes the crown to another Democrat, Maggie Hassan. But before he does, we sit down with him to look over his 8 years, his greatest victories, greatest challenges, and what advice he'd impart to the next governor. Today's broadcast on The Exchange is in collaboration with New Hampshire Public Television, which will air this interview on January 1st and January 5th at 8 and 10 p.m. This hour, we also won't be taking phone calls or new emails. And welcome, Governor John Lynch. Nice to see you.
It's good to be here, Laura.
Well, 8 years, and you kept pollsters over at the UNH Survey Center confounded by those high approval ratings at a time when voters seem very fickle, Governor Lynch, going back and forth, throwing out one group of politicians and the other. Your opponent, Joe Kenney, one political year remarked that running against you was like running against the Pope. Pretty impossible. How'd you do it?
First of all, the 8 years really went by so quickly. People told me after I was elected that the however long I served would just fly by, and they certainly did. It seems like just yesterday I was elected for the first time back in 2004. But what I've tried to do is really focus on helping people and solving problems and trying to be bipartisan, involving both Democrats and Republicans, and doing things and creating opportunities that would make a difference in the lives of the people of New Hampshire. That's what I committed to do back in 2004. And what I tried to continue to do throughout my 8 years.
Despite that reputation for bipartisanship, and you were always quoted as saying, I want to roll up my sleeves, work in a bipartisan way, I don't care who gets the credit. Did you have to become more of a partisan in recent years, Governor Lynch, given the enormous majorities that Republicans had in the House and Senate?
No, I don't think I had to become more partisan, but I do think it was more difficult. I think the legislature and the State House works on trust, and you can only have trust if you have communication. And the communication really wasn't there the way it should have been the last couple of years.
Although, just as someone who's observed both national politics and state politics myself, it does seem like the mood, both nationally and here in New Hampshire, is more partisan, is more my way or the highway.
Well, it was that way the last couple of years. I hadn't experienced that in the previous 6 years. And I suspect and expect that the legislature will return to more normalcy the way it's traditional in New Hampshire, where there's a greater degree of civility than what we saw the last couple of years.
Why do you suppose that's going to happen? What's the cause?
I think there's more of a balance now. I think the people of New Hampshire want us to work together. They expect us to be more centrist in the way we manage problems. They expect us to be pragmatic. And so I believe that the governor-elect, as well as this legislature, will be more in that tone, the way the people of New Hampshire really want us to be.
You know, despite your popularity, sky-high ratings, big election victory margins, there's a flip side to the popularity, Governor Lynch, the critique that part of the reason you were so popular is that you didn't take bold stands on very many issues, even when your supporters wanted to, that you didn't lead. That's been a criticism over the years. How do you feel about that, Governor Lynch, that you waited too much for the legislature to take the lead, that you didn't use the office as a bully pulpit?
I think the major accomplishments that we were able to achieve were a result of bold leadership and really taking strong initiatives, whether we're talking about in education, for example, and we'll get more into the steps that we took to lower the high school dropout rate, which I believe was and is really defining legislation here in New Hampshire, to making sure that kindergarten is available to everybody, to what we did with regard to improving the accessibility of health care, expanding Healthy Kids. So I think a lot of the accomplishments really are a result of really, I think, bold initiatives that we took.
So where does that sort of, I don't want to say hands-off, but low-key style, where does that come from? Is that just your personality, or does that come from being a CEO?
I think we all should be measured in terms of results, not style. And if you look at the results over the last 8 years, I mean, they're quite significant. I talk a lot about the fact that New Hampshire remains the most livable state in the nation, the safest state, best state in the country in which to raise children. Our unemployment rate, although high for New Hampshire standards, is relatively low compared to the national average. So by all measures, New Hampshire's doing very well compared to other states. And I think in the private sector and in the public sector, leaders should be measured by results.
You know, it's interesting that you talk about those statistics around New Hampshire. And you're right, we often rank near the top in these national rankings on whatever measure you're looking at. There was an interesting study, though, Governor Lynch, that came out from the New Hampshire Center for Public Policy Studies a couple months ago that said we can't rely on these demographic trends and these economic trends in the future, that the future may not be as bright for New Hampshire, given that we're aging, given that there's difficulty in our revenue streams. I'm sure you saw the report. What do you think?
I think the key to prosperity going forward, and I've thought this for a number of years, is education. Education drives jobs. It's the only correlation between jobs and economic development. And if we focus on education, and if we invest in education, not only in elementary, middle school, and high school, but also higher education, then I think the jobs and the economic development here in New Hampshire will take care of themselves.
Although, as you know probably better than anybody, money for education is perennially tight at the local level, and we saw huge cuts to education at the state level last year.
And I was opposed to that. You know, New Hampshire is already 50 out of 50 in terms of state funding for public higher education. And the legislature chose to cut that by 50%, which I was against. So what that means is it causes public higher education to be less accessible and affordable to the people of New Hampshire. It also puts a place like UNH in a position of needing to accept more out-of-state students to balance the budget, which I think disenfranchises New Hampshire kids.
So how do you get around that, though? Nobody wants high taxes. Nobody wants to pay more. So where do you find that sweet spot?
I think education needs to be a priority, along with other priorities. But education is so important. And as I've said, the only statistical correlation between that drives jobs and drives economic development here in New Hampshire is education. So we need to continue to make education a priority, not only in the lower grades, but also higher education as well.
Stepping back, if you could, for a minute, Governor Lynch, you said it just seems like yesterday that you were running for the first time. Take us back, if you could, to late 2003, maybe early 2004. Were you actively thinking, I'd like to take on Craig Benson? Or did people come to you and say, gosh, John Lynch, could you, you know, stand in for us in the Democratic Party? How did that work?
I got mixed messages. You know, some people would come and say, you know, you should run. You have a good chance. And other people said this was a terrible time to run, going back to 2004. The fact that no first-term incumbent had been beaten in 78 years, and no first-term incumbent had been beaten by somebody from another party, going back even longer than that, and you're running against a guy who's worth $600-800 million. So a lot of people told me not to run. But I took the risk. And we ended up being successful.
So was it your idea, or was it more people coming to you and saying,
well,
do this?
People coming to me, but it was mostly, you know, my idea, and my family, too. My family, my wife, they strongly encouraged me to run.
Really?
In fact, they actually got there before I did. And we did it together. It was a family event. The first summer, we were in 14 parades. My wife was there in all of them. And so we really campaigned and did it together.
What was it, Governor Lynch, that you thought you had inside you that would make you, A, able to beat Craig Benson, and B, do this job? I mean, it's a tough job.
It is a tough job. But I love New Hampshire. I love the people of New Hampshire. And I always thought that being governor gives you the opportunity to make a difference in their lives, a positive difference in their lives. And it certainly has turned out to be that way for me.
I think a lot of governors, and I've interviewed several, have been surprised by, struggled with their relationship with the legislatures, especially perhaps someone like you who didn't have experience in that area before. Was that difficult, surprising? What did you have to learn about working with that giant legislature?
It didn't surprise me. And I've always been somebody who didn't care whether a representative or senator was a Republican or a Democrat. I just want to work together with people to solve problems. And I think people understand that that's the way I was back then, and I continue to be that way today. So I think if you have that attitude, put partisan politics aside and focus on doing what's best for New Hampshire, that helps cultivate good relationships with the legislature.
That's a very CEO approach, I'm guessing.
Well, I did that way. I was that same way when I was CEO of NOL, just trying to work with people, involve people, not only in the problem but also in the solution. I had to do that at NOL. I took over NOL at a time when it was losing $1 million a week, $50 million a year. And the way I worked was involving everybody in the problems and in the solutions. And that includes everybody from the salespeople to the factory workers to the dealers to the customers to the suppliers.
It was often said of Craig Benson that he tried to run government too much like a business. There are big differences. How is governing a state with all the stakeholders and all the issues and all the politics, how is that different than running a company, than being a CEO?
There are similarities and there are differences. In both cases, I think you need to build a team. When I started at NOL, the managers, because NOL was the result of four companies coming together that really didn't end up being merged, the leaders didn't like each other, didn't trust each other, didn't want to work together. And the same was true when I became governor. For the most part, the department heads didn't like each other, trust each other, didn't want to work together.
Really?
They had their own political agendas. And so in both cases, I had to build a team. You don't get anything done by yourself. You have to build a team. And that's a real similarity between the private sector and the public sector. And also trust. In the private sector with NOL, I had to earn the trust of the employees, which was a challenge. And I feel the same way as governor of the state of New Hampshire. I get up every morning and believe that I have to earn the trust of the people of New Hampshire every single day. So there are similarities. There are a lot of differences. In the public sector, as chief executive of New Hampshire, you don't get to choose your customer. You don't get to choose your products. You don't even get to choose how you want to price the product. You have to serve everybody. And that's very, very different in the public sector than in the private sector.
Also, in the private sector, you can probably pick and choose your management team. In the governor's office, you have this odd thing here in New Hampshire where you don't even, in some instances, get to pick your own commissioners. Commissioners run on a 4 to 6 year cycle. Governors run on a 2 year cycle. So in some instances, you had Republican commissioners.
That's very true. And the decision-making process is very different. In the private sector, you can make decisions a lot more quickly. In the public sector, obviously, you have three branches of government. You have to make decisions working in collaboration with the legislature. You're also dealing with these things called R's and D's. Sometimes they don't get along with each other. So it's very different in the public sector, just in the decision-making process.
Well, if you're just joining us, this is a special broadcast with New Hampshire Governor John Lynch on New Hampshire Public Radio and in collaboration with New Hampshire Public Television. And Governor Lynch, looking back then, over the 8 years, and we'll talk in detail in just a minute, but give us your two biggest, proudest accomplishments during that long time in office.
I think the two biggest accomplishments, one is I've been able to bring people together, and I mentioned that before. Bring people together to solve problems. Now, whether it's around lowering the high school dropout rate or making healthcare more accessible or even dealing with the myriad of natural disasters that I faced over the 8 years as governor, I think it's about bringing people together. And I think the second is just being accessible, being available to the people of New Hampshire. And that's what the people of New Hampshire tell me. They like the fact that I'm out there all the time with them and accessible to them.
You had a reputation for giving out your cell phone number on laminated cards. Did people actually ever call you on that cell phone number?
Absolutely. And I like the fact that they call me. In fact, people still call me today the card I gave out to them resulting from the Alstead flood back in 2005. So I like the fact that people call me.
Some specific policy successes that you'd love to point to. When they write up the John Lynch history in New Hampshire history books, high school dropout rate, raising that from 16 to 18, would you count that as one of your major policy victories, Governor Lynch?
I think that was and is defining legislation for New Hampshire for a couple of reasons. One, it gives students more of an opportunity to get a good job, to have a better life, to be able to provide for themselves and their families. It used to be, as you know, kids could drop out at age 16. Which was the result of a law passed back in 1903. And back then, kids could get jobs, and today they can't get jobs if they drop out of high school. The military won't even accept kids who drop out of high school. Social costs are high. Rates of teen pregnancy and alcohol and drug abuse are much higher among the dropout population. But the other thing it helps is economic development. As I meet with business people all over New Hampshire, they continue to tell me they need the workers. The workers with the skills and talents and qualifications necessary to fill the jobs that for them will drive revenue, They'll make more money, invest it in the company, hire more people. So it's critical in terms of being able to give that opportunity to young people, but also make sure the workers are available for the positions that companies have. When I talk with businesses about relocating to New Hampshire, the only question they want to know is whether the workers are available. Everything else could be fine, but if the workers are not there, the businesses won't come to New Hampshire.
The concern that came up during this policy debate, and you and I talked about it, mm-hmm. I remember years back, was that schools are already strapped for cash. They were worried that they were going to have to lay out more cash to accommodate the kids who would have dropped out, special programs and so forth. As you know, Manchester high schools, some of them are really under strain, 30, 40 kids in a class. So do New Hampshire schools have the money to do this the right way?
It's interesting because when I first came out with the proposal, the concern mostly came not from businesses, but from superintendents and principals
sure.
and teachers and school board members. But after a period of time, they're the ones who embraced it. They love the fact that they were trying to make a difference in the lives of every single student. So the success we've had, and it has been very successful, Laura, by the way, at a time when high school dropout rates are literally of epidemic proportions in other states, which is what they are, we've reduced our high school dropout rate to about 1%, which is amazing. It's remarkable. But the success didn't come from that legislation. It came organically. Schools, superintendents, principals, they saw that it was working, they embraced it, and they developed programs in their own schools for those students who didn't do their best learning in the traditional classroom environment. That's why it was successful. Not because of what happened in Concord, but because what have happened in every single school district.
Well, and during your time in office, Governor Lynch, challenging economic times for much of your 8 years, especially when the economy really went south in 07, 08. What would you say was the Lynch approach to this softening, kind of scary economy over the years?
We suffered, you know, some of the worst economic times since the Great Depression. In fact, business revenue in 2011 was almost identical to what it was in 2005. So it was very, very challenging. And what I always tried to do, which I've talked about before, is get in and zero-base the budgets. Now, people talk about that a lot, but very few people have done it. Very few people know how to do it. But zero-base it and focus on priorities. What are our real priorities? We can't do everything. What do we need to focus on? And that, along with the department heads. The department heads have done a great job working with the state employees to really manage the budgets very, very tightly. And that allowed us to get through without making major structural changes to New Hampshire.
You had to make some layoffs during your time.
We did have to do that. We had to make some layoffs, unfortunately. I mean, New Hampshire, our budget and our appropriations and our spending, a big part of that are people related. So we did have to have layoffs.
A couple more questions after a short break, I think, Governor Lynch, about economic policy, how you responded, some of the difficulties of budgeting, too. Tough, tough times in terms of balancing the New Hampshire budget. So I'll ask you that after a short break. Also looking back at some of your perhaps disappointments while you were in office. And we'll take some emails, too. We have some emails from listeners that came in before the program. So a lot more with New Hampshire Governor John Lynch in this special broadcast on The Exchange on NHPR. We'll be back in just about a minute.
More with Governor John Lynch on The Exchange on NHPR, then at 10 on The Diane Rehm Show, getting health insurance exchanges up and running. It's day two of NHPR's 12 Days of Drawings, and today's prize is four tickets on the snow coach. When you support this 24-hour news service, you could win a trip on one of the few vehicles allowed on the Mount Washington Auto Road in Pinkham Notch in the winter. Make your year-end gift at nhpr.org. Support for NHPR comes from UR members NWS Badger & Company, makers of certified organic natural personal care products. Wishing everyone a warm and happy holiday season. Information at badgerbalm.com. From Conway Scenic Railroad, celebrating the holidays with Santa trains on weekends through December 23rd and daily train excursions Christmas Vacation Week. ConwayScenic.com. And the New Hampshire Charitable Foundation, helping generous donors give back to their community since 1962, online at nhcf.org. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, a special broadcast with New Hampshire Governor John Lynch as he prepares to leave New Hampshire's corner office after 8 years. This broadcast is in conjunction with New Hampshire Public Television, which will air this program on Channel 11 on January 1st at 8 p.m. and again on January 5th at 10 p.m. We won't be taking any new phone calls today or any new emails as well. Governor Lynch, just before the break, we were talking about fiscal challenges, economic challenges. You were governor when the economy really went south, both here and nationally. And New Hampshire faced very tight, tight budgets, as you know, during those times. Even in the best of times, though, New Hampshire governors work under a difficult fiscal environment, no sales tax, no income tax. Given our unique tax structure, how does this affect the way that you balance the books while trying to meet the needs of the people of New Hampshire?
Well, it always is a balance. You need to keep spending low, and we have, you know, one of the lowest spending per capita metrics in the country. So it's important to keep spending low, but still balance out what the needs of the people are. And you have to make trade-offs. You have to choose priorities. You have to make tough decisions. I think it's also a question of looking at what we do, and this is true in the private sector as well, what we do today, as which is the result of what we did last year, did the year before that, which is why we always have to look at programs to see whether they're still effective, whether they're efficient, and still meeting the needs of the people. We have instituted a lean manufacturing concept in state government. So a lot of the department heads are working individually and collectively to apply principles of lean manufacturing to make state government more efficient. That's helped become
make us.
That means how you become more productive in terms of meeting the needs of the people. A good example is Department of Safety and Motor Vehicles offering the opportunity to citizens to renew their driver's license online. A great program and benefit for the people of New Hampshire. So instead of having to take a day off from work and schlepping your kids to motor vehicles to renew your license, you can do it in 15 minutes on a Sunday morning. I mean, that's a great example of being more efficient and meeting the needs of the people of New Hampshire. And we have programs like that in almost every agency in state government.
What would you have spent on if you had the money? Every governor says, I'd love to fund this, but I just can't. Was there one or two programs, Governor Lynch, where you thought, gee, I wish we could have spent money on that?
I would have spent more money on education. In fact, what I would like to have done is to have X amount of dollars, maybe a couple million dollars, available for SAUs jointly to apply for in order to get SAUs to work together, different school districts to work together, to collaborate together, particularly around technology. I had proposed that to the legislature. It didn't get into the budget, but I think that would have been a very worthwhile thing to do. I think we need to break down some of the fiefdoms that we have in education, particularly with SAUs, and get greater collaboration, again, particularly using technology.
Again, these are the school administrative units, the school districts, so to speak, and we have so many here in New Hampshire, even though we're a small state. So you're saying there's efficiencies and knowledge that could be shared if these fiefdoms were broken down a little bit. Is that what you're saying?
You know, if you talk to senior executives in charge of education from IBM and Apple and Cisco and Microsoft, they say the same thing, that technology is no longer the vehicle by which kids learn. It's the environment in which kids learn. And my hope and goal was that someday we'd see students from Berlin and Keene and Salem and Portsmouth taking a class together. And it might be Chinese, Mandarin Chinese, and the teacher would deliver the lecture over the student's iPad. And the student could play the lecture over and over again or replay the parts of the lecture that she or he didn't understand. And so when there was a classroom meeting, it would be a lot more productive. But I think we need to use technology more in terms of how we deliver education, particularly to the older grades.
Well, and you were, before you became governor, chair of the Board of Trustees for the university system. What about the university system, Governor Lynch? If you could have, would you have liked to have given them more money, or did you think that the state share was adequate?
I don't think it should have been cut. I would have at a minimum, flat-funded them at $100 million. To cut it by 50%, I think, was way too draconian. Flat funding it, I think, would have allowed them to keep tuition rates low, which I think is important in terms of being able to provide quality higher education to our New Hampshire students.
Although the critique of the university system, and not just here in New Hampshire but nationwide, is that there's been sort of an academic arms race. You know, universities spend money on gourmet dining halls and, you know, fully outfitted dorms instead of the basics. So there's that side of the spending equation too.
Yeah, but the dorms and the dining halls, those dollars are paid for by the students direct. They're not paid for out of state appropriations. State appropriations really go for the academic side of the house, for academic buildings, as well as to, for the most part, subsidize tuition for in-state students.
You talked earlier, Governor Lynch, about your what you felt like were your some of your greatest accomplishments, mentioned working together, getting people together, but also specifically the high school dropout rate, raising that to 18. Biggest disappointments, if you could, Governor Lynch, over the years, things you really wish you could have done and were not able to do for one reason or another.
We made great progress with regard to infrastructure here in New Hampshire, widening the Spalding Turnpike, for example, and replacing and refurbishing a number of bridges. You know, when I first went over and looked at the Spalding and looked at the bridges, there were wood pilings that were off-kilter holding up the bridges. And there were wood pilings that were put in place back in 1992 for the purpose of prolonging the life of those bridges by 1 year.
That's a little concerning.
And nothing had been done since. So now we've completed the widening of the Spalding Turnpike, which is going to open up economic development to everybody over there from Rochester right to Pease. We're going to alleviate the congestion, which has important quality of life issues, and enhance public safety. So that's been a real success. I was hoping we'd make more progress with I-93. We have provided the funding up to Exit 3 and the interchange at Exit 5, but there's still a shortfall of $250 million to get that widening completed to Manchester. And I wish we'd been able to make more progress, and I would hope that the legislature would find a way to come up with the money to finish the widening of I-93. It's the perfect time to do it. They could have it completed by 2016. The cost of capital is less than 2%, and bids are coming in well under what is budgeted. So that's an example of something I wish we'd been able to complete. We made a lot of progress with regard to health care, expanding the number of kids on Healthy Kids. Even before national health care reforms, we passed a bill into law allowing kids to stay on their parents' plan up to age 26. Electronic medical records we put in place. But we didn't really, in part it's our dependence on the federal government, lower the cost of health care in New Hampshire. The cost of health care in New Hampshire is high. It's not only a health care issue, it's an economic development issue because businesses are forced to grapple with the high and escalating cost of health insurance for their employees.
Higher than in many other states.
Exactly. Right now, our health care costs in New Hampshire are 18.5% of our gross state product.
Wow.
And that ends up squeezing out investments that we could be making in other areas. So we didn't make as much progress as I would have liked to have seen with regard to lowering the cost of health care.
Well, getting back to Interstate 93 for a moment, Governor Lynch, one of the suggestions that keeps coming up for finding the money is raising New Hampshire's state gas tax. Hasn't been raised in 20 years. I believe your own transportation commissioner suggested that that might be a good way to raise the money. What do you think?
There are a number of ways to do it. I was in favor of keeping the registration surcharge. It was $30, and that would have provided all the money we needed to widen I-93 and have more money for our betterment programs, basically paving around New Hampshire.
The legislature got rid of that.
Right. The legislature got rid of it. I was in favor of that. Whether they look at that or whether they look at raising the gas tax, they're going to have to figure out a way to do it. It's not right to take a position that you support the widening of I-93, but you don't want to raise the money to pay for it. That's not right. And so the money has to be there. But the people of New Hampshire will accept that if they see the benefit. And I see that clearly over what we're able to do in Hampton with open road tolling. Open road tolling, I get, Laura, more positive feedback from open road tolling over in Hampton than from any other construction project we've done here in New Hampshire. If we think about it, it used to be that when tourists would vacation in New Hampshire and then they would leave over on the seacoast, their last memory would be in a five-mile traffic jam extending all the way back to the Portsmouth
traffic circle. Not great for the brand.
Not great for the brand. And now they can just zip right through open road tolling, and we'll have open road tolling in Hooksett completed by mid-2013. So if people see the benefits, it's like the Spalding Turnpike. We raise tolls to pay for the Spalding Turnpike, the widening. If people see the benefit, the tangible benefit, then they'll support the added funding required.
Would you advise Governor-elect Hassan to look at the gas tax?
I think she should look at all options and then work with the legislature to determine what's the best way, the most palatable way of raising the money to complete the widening of I-93.
And I know during the election she said, not right now. She was still concerned about the economy and people's pocketbooks. Governor Lynch, I want to go from sort of bricks and mortar and roads with you to a difficult social issue that came up during your time in office. You moved from saying, I believe marriage should be between a man and a woman in your first campaign, to becoming the first governor to sign a gay marriage law not brought on by court action. Describe that emotional transition for yourself, Governor Lynch. That's a big shift in attitude over 8 years.
Well, 2 years before, New Hampshire and I signed the bill into law, approved civil unions.
Yes.
That was just 2 years earlier than that. So one of my questions was whether we were moving too quickly as a state. And my own personal position on this issue has evolved. I can tell you, walking around and meeting people from New Hampshire, I've had so many people come up to me thanking me for what we did with regard to gay marriage.
Really?
So many people, because it's provided an it's made their lives better. They're happier. They're no longer thought of as second-class citizens. It's really made, for them, a real opportunity in their lives. I've not had one person come up to me and say, because of that law, it's negatively impacted their own marriage. Not one. So I think it's here. I think it should remain in place in New Hampshire. And I think the people of New Hampshire accept it. And it's time to move on. And I'll add to that, Laura, I wish these out-of-state groups would stay out of our state and let us figure it out for ourselves. So I think it's become an accepted part of New Hampshire and who we are.
What was it, though, Governor Lynch, that made you change your own mind? As I said, you had a big transition there from 2004 to 2010.
Talking with a lot of people.
What did they say to you that made
you
feel?
In fact, interesting enough, business people were even further ahead of the political leaders in New Hampshire, because business people had for many years accepted gay marriage. And just talking with them about the issue and their thinking about the issue and whether they believe it's the right thing to do. So talking with people really helped, I think, change my mind in terms of my position on that issue.
As a businessman, are there economic benefits to being a gay marriage state?
There probably are, but that's not the reason to do it. The reason to do it is because it makes people feel better about themselves and better about their own lives. And it makes them happier at no cost to anybody else. And it's fairer. It's the right thing to do. That's the reason to do it.
Were there other issues, Governor Lynch, where over your time in office, after talking to people, after working with the legislature, you evolved, you changed your mind? I mean, we're allowed to change our mind in life.
I think it's important, as you see new evidence, as times change, to be open enough to look at positions and take different positions on issues. I can't think of any particular one, Laura, that comes to mind, but I'm sure there were. You know, as bills come through the legislative process, they change. I spend a lot of time talking with legislators about the bills, the importance, the pros and cons. Every bill which I have seen has consequences and has unintended consequences. So I want to really scrub the bill to look at what the unintended consequences are. So with most of the bills, depending upon how they go through the iterative process in the legislature, you know, my position might change depending on what I believe the unintended consequences are.
I want to ask you, Governor Lynch, about a very controversial issue here in New Hampshire. We got several emails before the program about your position on the Northern Pass Project.
Mm-hmm.
Again, this is the big hydroelectric power project planned from Canada down through New Hampshire onto the New England grid. I got several. I want to acknowledge that. But here's one from Peter in Plymouth, who says, Governor Lynch stated on many occasions that if the people did not want the project, they did not have to have it. The citizens in over 30 towns have stated their opposition to the project at town meetings. In most, the sentiment was unanimously and in all overwhelmingly against. The governor, Peter says, has been unresponsive to our pleas to help. Why has he not helped his constituents fight this highly destructive project? What do you think, Governor Lynch?
I have made it very clear that I think the goals of the project are worthwhile. Bringing 1,200 megawatts of hydropower to New Hampshire. A lot of that power ends up going on the grid. But I've also made it very clear that it shouldn't go forward unless the local communities support it. And if they don't support it, the project should not go forward. I've made that position very clear to the leadership of PSNH. Now, we're just going into the beginning of the approval process. That really hasn't started yet. It will begin. And again, I'll make my position clear that it shouldn't happen unless the local communities support it.
If you could go back, start over with this process, would you have handled it differently, Governor Lynch, or communicated it differently?
I wouldn't have, but I would have recommended that PSNH handle it differently. I think they should have gone right up to the North Country, met with the people whose lives would be affected by that, and like I try to do with the legislature, get them involved in the discussion, get them involved in the solution. Now, one possible solution, PSNH says that it's not economically palatable, is to bury the lines. I still think that needs to be looked at.
In the beginning, you were a big supporter. You had a big news conference with the mayor in Franklin. This is great. This is jobs. This is clean energy. So in the beginning, you seemed pretty happy about this.
I was happy about the goals, and I still support the goals. And I think most opponents to the project support the goals as well. 1,200 megawatts of clean energy coming into New Hampshire. I think the goal is worthwhile. But it shouldn't happen if it's going to disrupt the communities who oppose it, particularly with regard to their own homes and the impact on travel and tourism.
You mentioned just a minute ago your workings with the legislature, and I want to ask you a little bit more about that, Governor Lynch. You really did, during your time in office, stick to your nonpartisan guns, so to speak, and there were big political swings during your time. How did those differing dynamics, going from Republican to Democrat to Republican again, ever-changing, how did they affect you and the way that you govern? Do you have to govern differently when you've got Republicans running the legislature versus Democrats?
I think you spend more time with the power. I spent more time with the power and control. So when the Democrats were in control, obviously I spent more time with them, in part because there were more of them. When the Republicans were in control, I'd spend more time with the Republicans.
In terms of who you talk to?
In terms of who I talk to, bills I'm trying to get passed, budgets I'm trying to get passed and adopted. So you obviously spend more time with the party in control.
Some people have said that it's actually easier to work with the opposition party than it is to work with your own party, because your own party has maybe higher expectations and bigger disappointments when you don't do what they want. I wonder what you think about that.
You know, I haven't worried about party. You know, I just worry. I work with the people. The first time around, in 2005, Doug Scammon was Speaker of the House. Doug and I had a relationship going back to when we served on the UNH Alumni Board together. Doug and I talked every single day, Saturdays and Sundays, and had a wonderful relationship in a very nonpartisan way. And I've tried to maintain that style during the last 8 years.
Yeah, it's tricky sometimes. You did have to run against a Republican every time you ran for governor. So you did have to put that D on your chest a little bit.
No, and that's fine. But I think after the election, what you should do is put party politics aside and work together. And I think we're going to see that with this legislature. They're already talking, both sides, about how important it is to work together, collaborate. And that's what the people of New Hampshire want. I can tell you that's what I hear over and over again. The people of New Hampshire, and I'm out all the time, they say they want us to work together for their benefit to solve problems.
You know, and you mentioned that earlier, and it's good to hear optimism. I wonder, though, Governor Lynch, given the influence of outside groups on both the conservative and the liberal end, funding money, pouring money into certain issues and certain campaigns, I wonder if that's going to permanently change the political culture here in New Hampshire.
I hope it doesn't. And like I said earlier, I wish all these outside groups would stay out of New Hampshire, go someplace else, and let us figure it out for ourselves. Let us make our own mistakes, our own decisions. Create our own initiatives, but let us do it. But you're right, there's a lot of outside money that comes in, particularly during election time.
All right. Well, after a very short break, more with New Hampshire Governor John Lynch, more questions, emails, including a few about Governor Lynch's own political future. So keep it right here.
This is NHPR, where support comes from UR members and the McLean Law Firm and its corporate law group, providing businesses with timely solutions and completed transactions online at mclane.com. And the Melanson Company of Keene and Bow, 80 years of providing comprehensive roofing solutions, now offering solar energy solutions, including roof integrated systems, melanson.com. This is NHPR.
Today on Word of Mouth, Dronestagram. An artist posts photos of where drones fall, adding a layer of reality to distant warfare. And climate change is sending the ski industry downhill. We'll look at how mountainside resorts are coping with the start of another green winter. I'm Virginia Prescott. Word of Mouth looks for fresh powder today at noon and again at 9 on NHPR.
This is The Exchange on New Hampshire Public Radio. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today on The Exchange, a special broadcast with New Hampshire Governor John Lynch as he prepares to step down after 8 years in our state's corner office. We've been talking about some of the challenges that Governor Lynch has faced, some of his achievements, and also getting some thoughts on his governing style. We're not taking any phone calls this hour or any new emails, although Governor Lynch, I do have a couple other emails that came in before the program that I want to share with you. You talked earlier about your achievements and some of your disappointments, including healthcare costs and infrastructure. You were also unable to get an education funding amendment to the state constitution, a goal that has bedeviled every New Hampshire governor for almost the last 20 years. Why do you think you weren't able to achieve that? And what would that amendment have done if you had your way?
There's so many differences of opinion in terms of what should go into an amendment. And I probably looked at hundreds of different iterations of an amendment. The amendment I wanted was an amendment that affirmed the state's responsibility for public education, but allowed the state to send more money to the communities and children who need it more than others. It's the only way I know of ensuring that every child in New Hampshire has the opportunity to get a quality education, regardless of where he or she lives or their income level. So that's what I supported. There were those who wanted an amendment that would allow the state, if the state so chose, to abandon its responsibility for public education, leave it up to the legislature. So if the legislature decided that the state had no role, no responsibility for public education, they could choose to not have a role or not fund public education. I was opposed to that type of amendment. That basic disagreement, I think, resulted in not being able to get the numbers required to pass a constitutional amendment.
And like I said, bedeviled governors and lawmakers for at least 17 years since that original Claremont decision. At some point, Governor Lynch, should our state's political leaders just give up on this issue? It never passes. Even this year when everyone said, look, you've got Lynch on board, you've got Bill O'Brien, House Speaker, on board, you've got Peter Bragdon, the Senate President, on board. At this point, do we just give up?
I wouldn't give up because I think it's the right thing to do. I think if we're trying to do what's best for our children and what's best for our communities as a state and how we appropriate money, we should be able to make the decision to send more money to the communities and to the children who need it more than others. There is a disparity right now in terms of the quality of education offered and received by our children. And the best way to eliminate that disparity is by sending more money to those children. And that's what the legislature should be permitted to do. So I wouldn't give up on it.
Well, when the amendment failed, Bill O'Brien, the House Speaker, said, look, Governor Lynch could have delivered more Democratic votes, and he didn't, that you didn't get out there enough on this. What do you think?
Well, I was out there on it. But again, the basic disagreement, and it was basically the Republican caucus that decided to not support it, was just like I said, they wanted the legislature and a future legislature to be able to walk away from its responsibility for public education. And therein lay the difference of opinion.
I want to share another email with you, Governor, that came in. This is from Jim on an important issue during your time and for the next governor. A year ago, you sent a letter to legislative leaders explaining why you would veto any casino legislation. You cite loss of jobs, diversion of spending from existing businesses, excessive political influence by gambling interests. Your gaming study commission found that a single border casino as proposed would create 10,000 additional problems in addicted gamblers and cause 1,200 additional serious crimes per year. Jim asks, over this past year, have you seen any reason to drop your opposition to casinos? And Jim sounds pretty happy that you do oppose casinos.
No, I'm still opposed to expanded gambling. I worry about it for a number of reasons. I worry about it in terms of proliferation. Now, a legislature might say today we're only going to have one or two.
That's what people are saying
but
now.
But over time, looking over 20 years, what will happen is the state will enter into another downturn, another recession. There'll be a need for more revenue. And guaranteed, people will say, you know, we already have a casino in Salem or Hudson or Seabrook. Why not put one in Loudoun at the Speedway or put one in the North Country? They're already talking about that, by the way, this time around, or put one in Manchester or Portsmouth. And over time, we'll have more casinos, more expanded gambling, and you won't be able to shut it off. So I worry about that. I worry about the influence in Concord, and there'll be a lot of influence. All you need is the owner of a casino, which does deliver maybe tens of millions, if not hundreds of millions of dollars to the state, to take a position on a bill and say, you know, if you don't either pass this bill or veto the bill, I'm going to have to lay off 1,000 people.
Kind of like the railroad barons.
Everybody
earlier
will be down there saying, oh, please don't lay off 1,000 people. Please don't pull the casino. We will accept your position on a bill. And that pervasive influence will even get worse. So I worry about that. The other thing that will happen is our brand as a state will change. Connecticut, they don't even spend money on marketing anymore because their brand is determined by Foxwoods. And I don't think that's the kind of state we want to be. We want to be a state where we control the brand, not somebody else does. We also don't have any regulatory agency in place. So I think it's a bad idea. Let me go back to what I said earlier. New Hampshire is acknowledged as one of the most livable states, safest states, best state in the country in which to raise children. I don't think we should go forward with a structural change that could negatively put those metrics at risk. And I think expanded gambling would.
Now, we talked earlier about how you evolved on the same-sex marriage issue. This is interesting for me, Governor Lynch, to hear you speak so passionately against gambling, because I remember talking to you about it over the years, and you said, I need to be convinced that it wouldn't hurt our quality of life. So closing the door but leaving it open a crack. So is this another issue where you've evolved? You've really come to change your thinking on this?
I have seen how the efforts in the legislature have really ramped up, driven by out-of-state forces. And they've ramped up considerably over the last 2 to 4 years. And that really leads me to worry about the influence in Concord.
State Senate Democrats a couple years back seemed to have a change of heart on this issue. They said they shared your concerns about crime and so forth, but they were equally concerned about the loss of services in the state, you know, from mental health and substance abuse and children with disabilities. So they were kind of weighing that calculation of risks on both ends to the state's quality of life. And they came down the side of gambling because they were so concerned about the loss of social services.
I'm not opposed to expanded gambling for moral reasons. I think if people want to go to Foxwoods, that's fine. As you know, there'll be now, you know, 2 or 3 casinos in Massachusetts. I'm opposed to it for these other reasons, which I think will have a negative impact on the state of New Hampshire long term. Now, if all we're worried about is what's going to happen in the next couple of years, then the decision might be different. But I think we have to take a long-term perspective on this, long after we're in office. And for me, that's going to be sooner rather than later. But I really worry about the impact on New Hampshire over 20 and 30 years.
Another issue that you were opposed to while you were in office and that Governor-elect Hassan has a different view is medical marijuana. There seems to be strong sentiment for it in the state legislature. Governor-elect Hassan says she supports limited medical marijuana. What are your thoughts there, Governor Lynch? How would you advise her to proceed on this one?
Well, she's going to have to decide for herself how she wants to proceed. And I'm not opposed to medical marijuana. I think if it could help people who are suffering from cancer, I think that would be wonderful. But the problem is there's no way you can control medical marijuana, the distribution of medical marijuana, and the proliferation of the distribution, something that we have seen occur in other states. Now, as we know, if hospitals could dispense it, I think that would be great, but hospitals won't because it's not a federally approved drug. If doctors could write a prescription for it, I think that would be great. But they won't because you can't write a prescription for a drug not approved by the FDA. So I'm not opposed to medical marijuana. I don't see a way that it can be distributed and contained. It hasn't happened in other states. In fact, a lot of other states are trying to reel it back. The former governor of Montana tells me that when they approved medical marijuana, it was primarily distributed at the ski areas in Montana.
At the ski areas?
Because it's not possible to contain it. Anybody could get it. And so I think it's a problem for New Hampshire. And as we know, law enforcement is absolutely against it. And I think we have to listen to law enforcement as well here.
Well, as I said, we asked for emails before the program and got quite a few, Governor Lynch, on your own political future. So I'd love to share a couple of those with you now. And I want to thank everybody for emailing. This is from William in Epping. Your stirring introduction of the president at his Portsmouth rally the day after the Democratic convention was used in television and radio ads broadcast from New Hampshire, Massachusetts, and Maine. Has the president or his team discussed any possible role for you in his second administration?
No.
That was easy. And I got several emails also along the lines of this next one. This is Doug in Portsmouth. Has Governor Lynch considered running against Kelly Ayotte in 2016?
No. I don't want to go to Washington. And I've said that before on this show and to other people. I have respect for, you know, Kelly and for the others who run for office that'll take them to Washington. I have zero interest in running for the U.S. Senate. And I won't run for the U.S. Senate.
Why is that?
Because I just want to be in New Hampshire, Laura. I love New Hampshire. I love the people of New Hampshire. It's my family. And I just want to stay here. I am happiest when I'm walking down Main Street in Concord saying hi to people, walking down Elm Street in Manchester. And that's really what I want to do. I don't want to be going to Washington.
What do you think, Governor Lynch, about the 2-year term for governor? Should New Hampshire go to 4 years like other states? I've heard other governors complain that they're constantly in campaign mode under our system.
You know, I think it depends on the governor. For me, it hasn't been an issue because I'm out all the time anyway. So my campaign life is not a lot different than my non-campaign life. So I think 2 years is fine. The big issue is the raising of the money, which you have to do every couple of years. So that is an issue. But in terms of 2 years versus 4 years, I don't think it matters that much.
And, well, easy to say when you're winning by 70%, but we won't talk about that right now. Would you consider running for governor again if in 5 years the Democrats said, you know, gosh, John Lynch, we're desperate, we can't find anybody, or our candidate got in trouble or whatever? Would you run again?
No. I want to be a good ex-governor. When I left Knoll, after running the company for 7 years, they wanted me to stay on the board. And I said to them, I'm not going to stay on the board. In fact, I'm not going to have any contact with the company for a year. And it's not because I didn't like the company. It's because I did like them. I wanted to leave a lot of discretion to the next management to do what they wanted to do without me being there looking over their shoulders. And so I plan to have a very, very low political profile.
Really? Not going to write a book or anything?
I'm not planning to. If you want to help me, maybe I will, Laura, but
no,
I'm
busy.
Not planning to.
So what are you going to do?
You know, my expectation is I'm going to go back into the private sector. That's what I did before, as you know. I may do some teaching. I may do some teaching around what the differences, what we talked about this early on, the differences and similarities between running a company in the private sector and being chief executive in the public sector. It's a fascinating discussion in terms of the differences and the similarities. We got into some of them earlier, but that's what I plan to do.
One of your greatest pleasures, I know, as governor was greeting the state's fourth graders, because in fourth grade, that's when kids learn about state government, and they all come to the state house. And I have heard that no matter who you're meeting with, perhaps Barack Obama is the exception, I don't know, you come out and you talk to those kids. What have you gotten from that, Governor Lynch? You seem to love it. I have to say, my own son was in one of those classes.
I did actually drag Barack Obama out to meet with a fourth grade class when
really?
He came in to see me. Yes. So it doesn't matter with whom I'm meeting. I'll get up and I'll leave to go say hi to the fourth graders, and they're just so candid and they're open, and they ask great questions. I just really, really enjoy. One of the great experiences I have, if you have a second, I went to the Broken Ground School as part of Read Across America. This was in the spring. And I was getting to leave after I read, and the fourth grade teacher said, no, we have a surprise for you. So the fourth graders stood up, and they sang songs for me. And they had researched and found out that growing up, my favorite group was Gary Lewis and the Playboys. I don't know whether you remember Gary Lewis and the Playboys or not, but they were my favorite group growing up. And so they got up and they sang Gary Lewis and the Playboys songs, but they changed the words and the lyrics to reflect my tenure as governor.
Can you sing a little?
I'm not going to sing, but they do have a song. Gary Lewis has a song, Sure Gonna Miss Her, and they changed it to Sure Gonna Miss You. And it was so moving. I mean, they moved me to tears. I was so touched by it.
Wow.
The interesting part of that is that got on YouTube. And Gary Lewis saw it. And Gary Lewis emailed my wife, Susan, saying how touched he was that this fourth grade class was singing his songs as a way to say goodbye to me. So I have lots of moving experiences like that with the fourth graders.
Well, and the Associated Press covered a story where a group of fourth graders from Rye Elementary shared their ideas with you this fall. Here are a few of them, Governor Lynch. Start your own taco shop. You can be president in about 4 years. It doesn't say, unless you can dial it in, I don't think you're going to do that. Be in a rock band. Maybe Gary Lewis needs some help. Get a new pet, maybe a gerbil or a hamster. Relax in a hot tub, go to Hawaii or St. John, go skydiving, hang gliding. Any of those appeal to you yet?
I do have that book. And my wife and I are going to look it over. We'll pick maybe some of the best suggestions.
Well, and here's probably my favorite. You'll have plenty of free time soon, and I think you should enjoy it. Since you're outgoing, Governor, advice for Maggie Hassan about politics, but maybe also just about the philosophical mindset that you need to wake up with every morning when you're governor of New Hampshire.
I used to wake up every morning believing I had to go out and earn the trust of the people of New Hampshire. And I'd go to bed every night thinking to myself, now what did I do that helped people during the day? It didn't have to be something huge. It could be something simple. And that's what I always did. I think Maggie doesn't need my advice. I think she's going to be very pragmatic. We met and talked about her role as governor. She's very centrist, and I think the people of New Hampshire want us to be centrist, pragmatic, right in the middle. So I think Maggie's going to do a great job as governor.
How would you advise her to not be pulled by her own party? Again, this is sometimes a struggle for governors who are governing when their own party is in charge.
Well, I think she's going to work very well with both the Senate leadership, and the Senate will remain in the hands of the Republicans, albeit narrowly. And she has a great relationship with the House leadership. And I think she'll reach out not only to the Republicans and the Democrats as she proposes initiatives, as she deals with the budget, as she makes decisions about bills. So I think instinctively she knows how to do that.
And does she have one of those laminated cards with your cell phone number on it?
With hers? I don't know. She has one with mine, probably.
That's what I mean, so she can call you in a pinch.
I think most people in New Hampshire have my cell phone number by now.
Governor Lynch, it's been really fun talking to you. Thank you very much for giving us the time this morning.
Well, thanks for having me on, Laura.
Again, that's New Hampshire Governor John Lynch stepping down in just about a month after 8 years in the corner office. The Exchange is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio. The engineer is Dan Colgan. Our producer is Ellen Grimm. Our volunteer is Priscilla Malcolm. Our intern is Samantha Johnson. Special thanks today to R.J. Perkins, Alex Urbanowski, Nick Wolos, Becky Cates, Mike Sathel, and Andrew Perella. Again, this program will be broadcast on New Hampshire Public Television, Channel 11, on January 1st at 8 p.m. and January 5th. At 10 p.m. The Exchange's theme music was composed by Bob Lord. Our executive producer is Keith Shields, and I'm Laura Canoy.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you missed any part of today's program, listen to The Exchange anytime at nhpr.org.